Hello and welcome to Virtus Voices. This is Joe Terranova, Senior Managing Director and Chief Market Strategist for Virtus Investment Partners. Today, I am joined by George Gadelius, Managing Director and Head of Leveraged Finance at Sykes Investment Advisors. George is Senior Portfolio Manager of the Virtus Sykes Floating Rate High Income Fund and the Virtus Sykes Senior Loan ETF. George, welcome to the conversation, and I'd like to begin, if you would, with a brief discussion, and if you'd share your observations and expectations on the overall macroeconomic environment. And certainly, we did not think when we planned this conversation, George, that we would be talking about the impact of the coronavirus, but unfortunately, that's now part of the environment, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and observations overall.
Sure, Joe, thank you. Perhaps just start with the pre-virus comments and then try to frame the virus within those comments. So, you know, overall, we remain constructive on the economy. We feel that today's GDP print at 2.1% continues essentially a decade of 2-ish percent growth with a brief spurt recently post-tax change, but that has obviously since faded. For 2020, we feel now that at least phase one of the trade deal with China is behind us and the USMCA is behind us, that exports, which were a drag last year, we did see exports in Q4 rebound, but we feel exports can be additive to GDP growth, as can business investment, which was anemic last year. The offset to that could be, at least in Q1, could be Boeing, as obviously Boeing has a very long tail and a lot of industry suppliers have been negatively impacted. So that could shave as much as 3/4 of a point off Q1, but to the extent they get back online by June, some of that could be made up. So we feel that 2-ish percent is kind of our base case for this year in the current environment. Obviously, now we've got the coronavirus, which obviously right now is the bulk of the impact, has been in China, and China being the second largest economy in the world, and we've had several cities essentially shut down. You know, they're absolutely something to watch. But the one positive as it relates to the leveraged loan market, I think, is that big chunk of the leveraged loan market is very domestic oriented. So whether it's your local cable company or broadcasting company or gaming company, they're very U.S. centric businesses. There are sectors like chemicals, like some parts of tech that obviously do sell to China, so they may be impacted. But the real multinational credits that you see out there, that they're really in the investment grade world, much stronger balance sheets, and shouldn't really be impacted. We shouldn't see a lot of impact in our market, but it does create that risk off environment, and that's something that we'll be watching.
So let's talk a little specific sector, if we could. Certainly, I think you would agree technology has been an incredible performing sector and a contributor to the equities appreciation, both domestically and even to a certain extent, not as much, but globally. Apple and Microsoft domestically now comprise nearly 10% of the overall S&P. George, share with us, if you would, the strength in technology and those equity companies, how that will relate to the floating rate side of the conversation.
Sure. So like equity tech has certainly become a very large sector within leveraged loans, you know, approximately 14%, depending on which sub-index you're looking at. And it seems like it just happened overnight. It used to be around 7-ish percent, and we've seen a lot of M&A in the space. But keep in mind that tech in the leveraged loan space is very different than the tech you just alluded to, Joe, in that these are smaller companies. They're levered. A lot of these guys have a lot of leverage, in particular on the software and services side, and don't have dominant market positions that we're used to and accustomed to from the likes of, be it Facebook or as you said, Microsoft and Apple. So these are credits that in some cases have 7x leverage and are depending on the growth rates that they've seen in the past to allow them to delever. So the approach we've taken is to be very cautious on tech. We own roughly half of the index weight at around 7%. And on top of that, a lot of that 7% is focused in fact, on the hardware side of things, which has not been dominated by LBOs, and the majority of hardware companies that we own are, in fact, public companies that are very conservatively levered, somewhere between 1 to 4 turns of leverage, and are generating, you know, copious amounts of free cash flow and are looking at the world in a much more conservative manner.
What would you say the average market cap is on the holding?
The majority of these guys are private. They've essentially left the public markets via LBO, but these are all small caps, small cap equivalent, with a few exceptions. There are, you know, large credits. Obviously, Dell is one in our market, and then you have semiconductor companies like Cypress Semiconductor or TTM Technologies that public and that are not small caps. A lot of the software companies are companies that have between 50 and 150 million of EBITDA. So these are companies that would most likely be your classic Russell 2000 type company.
A lot of clouds over the energy sector. Natural gas prices are trading around $1.80 and a half. Energy is down nearly 15% for the year, lowest levels in about 3 months. Oil pressing towards $50. A troubled sector, certainly on the equity side, with some spillover into high yield. Are there any opportunities as you see it when you look through the portfolios?
We've been cautious. We've been reducing our exposure in energy. We're probably just under, you know, neutral to a slightly underweight now. We really have been focused on pipelines, the MLPs that essentially are just moving product from point A to point B. They tend to have less volatility in their numbers as they typically have minimum volume commitments, and most of their customers are investment-grade credits that just need to move oil or natural gas from the wellhead down to terminal and just are essentially using the pipelines to move their product. We're not really, don't really have anything in the E&P space. And we've got a couple guys in the service space that are in the hydraulic fracturing business, but they are very, very conservatively capitalized under two turns of leverage. But there are headwinds in the sense that, you know, you've got bigger picture themes of ESG and is investment in energy going to be moving outside of the sector now because of some of the ESG themes. Electric vehicle adoption is something that you continually have to watch. That could benefit natural gas guys, but to your point, Joe, it, regardless of how much we've shipped overseas via LNG, and we've got pipelines now down into Mexico. Mexico has one of the highest rates in the OECD for electric rates, so we're trying to ship natural gas to them to bring their prices down. The price just refuses to go higher, so you have energy producers that are flaring natural gas that they're finding while they're drilling for oil, and it's uneconomical to take it out of the ground and transport it, so they just flare it, meaning they're burning it. So that doesn't bode well for natural gas, that's for sure.
Okay, while we're talking energy and thinking about the high-yield market, conversation seems to be on bank loans out-yielding the high-yield market itself. Could you offer for us some fundamental evidence or technical evidence why there's validity in that conversation?
Part of it's technical. High yield enjoyed strong inflows last year into the retail funds. Loans obviously saw the opposite. The double B market of high yield benefited from lower treasury prices last year. That also helped drive yields down in high yield. We're seeing double B deals come to market now in many cases under 4%. So loans obviously have the floating rate aspect of the coupon, which is LIBOR, and LIBOR did not move down as much as treasuries last year. So that has held up. And obviously loans had outflows from the negative technical there. You look at it on a risk-adjusted basis, loans look pretty attractive right now relative to high yield and other asset, fixed income asset classes like EM. We'll see. It's early thus far in 2020, but it seems like flows have absolutely stabilized over the last 4 to 6 weeks, and more so on the ETF side than the active side. But nonetheless, active managers have seen inflows this year as well. I think we got into a very oversold position, and looking at loans just only when rates are moving up, it's tough to time the market. you missed the first couple of weeks of January last year and the last few weeks of December, you missed the bulk of the 8%+ return in loans last year. We feel it's an asset class that should not be rented. It should be a permanent asset allocation in your portfolio, albeit small, 5 to 10%, and that regardless of which way the rate winds are shifting, the asset class performs well in both environments.
George, thank you for your time today, your insights, and the wonderful contribution that you've offered to Virtus Voices. I look forward to working with you in the future on further Virtus Voices podcasts. And to our listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in to Virtus Voices. And please know, for more information, you could always visit virtus.com.